Good morning and welcome to this morning's Committee on Regional Affairs hearing. With me today is Senator Ellis, myself, Senator Olson. Senator Kukesh will be coming shortly. On today's agenda, we'll go ahead and consider HB 9, the In-State Gas Line Development Corporation. We've had previous hearings on this bill and have adopted a committee substitute, which is version J of the bill. Today, we're going to invite the sponsors to the table to discuss the committee substitute that we've adopted. We'll hold the bill for another hearing. And with that, Mr. Speaker, you want to go ahead and make some comments before we start?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Schnauth, I represent District 34 on the Kenai. We started last week in the committee. You introduced the CS. We talked about it just very briefly, Mr. Chairman, and we've had some time to go back and look at the CS. So, Mr. Chairman, we're here to try to answer any questions or concerns that the committee may have. And as you roll out the CS, we'll try to answer the concerns that we have in relationship to what that does to House Bill 9 in its entirety.
Okay, that's what we're looking for.
So just an open statement, Mr. Chairman. We'll go whatever direction you'd like to see us go.
Okay.
Thanks.
With that, I'd like to go ahead and recognize Senator Coghill, Senator Egan, and Senator Giesel that are there, that are in the audience. With that, come on up and go ahead and testify to what your thoughts are on the new CS.
Thank you, Senator Olson, members of the committee. My name is Rena Delbridge. I'm staff to Representative Hawker. You've heard from the sponsors their position on version J, and we appreciate this opportunity to discuss with the committee the substance that is both within your CS version J and what we would like to see restored in this bill. House Bill 9 was intended to create a Class I state entity that's charged with connecting Alaskans with Alaskan gas via pipelines. That entity is the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. The first order of business for AGDC is to pursue an open season for an in-state bullet line to determine whether or not there is sufficient shipping interest to support financing a pipeline. If an open season is successful, AGDC would be able to continue commercial engineering and design work and financial planning and negotiations to begin construction by 2015. Without sufficient commercial backing as evidenced by an open season, AGDC would not have a project to proceed with. As AGDC works on that line, HB 9, in the form that passed the House, also empowered AGDC to represent Alaskans in another project, which at this point is in the early discussion stage. That's a larger line carrying North Slope gas to export at Tidewater. As AGDC works on these projects, we also want to provide the framework for them to continue into the future, whether or not these first two projects are successful, to find additional ways to connect Alaskans with gas. Version J, introduced by the CRA committee, partially addresses a structure for AGDC, but does leave out some critical aspects. Version J establishes AGDC as a subsidiary corporation of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and includes the ability to acquire property and leases and other things necessary for a pipeline project. We appreciate that. It gives AGDC the direction to do gas pipelines, getting gas to Fairbanks, to South Central, and to other communities at the lowest rates possible, while trying to provide commercially reasonable rates for public utility and industrial customers, and also on the other end for shippers. We also appreciate that. The CS prohibits AGDC from constructing a line without legislative sanctioning in the form of a new law passed by a legislature at a future date. This is an addition in the CS version J, and AGDC and the sponsors are uncomfortable with legislative sanctioning that would require a new law passed by the legislature at a future date that could prohibit, in AGDC's mind, the ability of them to attract very sincere shippers, buyers, sellers to an open season project, as any project would be contingent upon that additional layer of political involvement in the future. The CS establishes the In-State Natural Gas Pipeline Fund and directs AGDC to prudently manage that fund. It requires publication of some terms of precedent agreements resulting from an open season. The CS eliminates the legislative direction to AGDC to pursue the pipeline that it proposed in its July 2011 progress report to the legislature, as required by House Bill 9 that passed in 2010. It also eliminates references to in-state gas.
I mean, 369.
I'm sorry, 369. Right. Did I say two? I apologize.
Actually, you said nine, didn't you?
Forgive me, yes.
369. Just
369.
Just know what we're talking about.
Correct. The CS.
You have to slow down, by the way.
I can do that, too.
Well, I just want to make sure that we're, because it's very confusing. To HB9 is on the table, 369, whatever else. And there was an HB9 back then, too, and I wasn't sure.
So I see.
I want to make sure that we're.
Yes, sir.
Deliberately going through the process. Go ahead.
The CS version J eliminates references to specifically in-state gas pipeline. We're a little bit concerned that that may encourage AGDC's participation in something that's not strictly an in-state gas pipeline. The CS restricts AGDC's ability to manage its assets. While they are secured as a full subsidiary of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, part of managing assets needs to be the ability to transfer and dispose of assets as necessary to advance this goal of connecting gas in Alaskans. The CS does not allow AGDC to issue revenue bonds or to determine the ownership structure of a pipeline. This creates uncertainty in an open season, and it also leaves AGDC potentially proposing a project that it lacks the means to follow through on. The CS adds the sanctioning requirement that we talked about. That requires, again, additional involvement with politics and legislative process, and that creates uncertainty and political risk for potential shippers and equity owners. The CS, further, does not allow AGDC to offer contract transportation service. This leaves the line operating as a common carrier. We have a situation where gas pipelines need the ability to offer firm transportation service as a contract carrier if they are, in fact, to deliver gas to the immediate users that need to produce something, be it power, liquefied natural gas, whatever, from that material.
I guess one of the questions I have, Ms. Delbridge, is that do you want questions now or do you want them as we go along?
At your pleasure.
Or do you want to go ahead and do them at the end?
Whenever you'd like. This is fine.
Okay. I just don't want to interrupt your flow there and then we can go back.
It's okay.
Okay. Well, if you're into questions that are now, as we look at the concept of building another gas line, there's three gas lines that are proposed. Isn't that correct?
I'm not sure. You would have. I believe that there's one project that's being planned under the AGEA license.
Okay, we got the project that Bill Walker was promoting.
The All Alaska Gas Line.
Okay, that's the number one. You've got the big line going to the Lower 48, which is the AGEA line, and you have this in-state gas line that's there. Those three projects are the ones that are proposed, correct?
We believe that the AGEA framework was not an actual pipeline. That would be something that is still under consideration. They have not closed their open season, mm-hmm. but for 2 years have not been able to successfully negotiate contracts for that. The Alaska Gas Line Port Authority line that they call the All Alaska Line, uh-huh. to our knowledge, there is no project on the table. There is a concept. To our knowledge, there has been no open season. We have not seen engineering and design work. We have not seen any particular state support or request for support from that project.
Okay. And then you talked about sanctioning by the legislature. I guess one of the questions is why wouldn't you want to have sanctioning by the legislature, especially when it comes to revenue bonds, because otherwise it looks like an open checkbook that you can have out there to bond at whatever level you want to. I guess why is there a problem with that?
Mr. Chairman, the problem is that creates uncertainty.
Sure.
If AGDC is, in fact, able to secure the shipping commitments in an open season that allow for a commercial project, those contracts will be the support sufficient to procure financing for this pipeline. Mm-hmm. They then need to be able to move quickly with the financial markets so that they do not lose an opportunity or a window of ideal rates and so on Wall Street, mm-hmm. that could help them in their mission of delivering gas at the lowest possible costs rates to Alaskans. A legislative sanctioning would require additional time frames, additional components. The sponsors believe that the legislature, that part of what has made other in-state projects not go forward in the past is the fact that politics has interfered in the sense of different people wanting to pick routes, mm-hmm. Different people wanting to determine size, regardless of what other limitations are already on the size of a pipe. This is a way to tell fundamentally a state entity what your goal is, what you're able to do, go out and do it. We're not going to get in the way of the details and try to re-engineer this or reroute this or redirect this if you found a project that meets the mission given to you by the legislature.
But uncertainty from the standpoint from the end user, how do we make sure that those are kept within check? Otherwise, you've got a corporation out there that can borrow multiple billions of dollars for a project that's going to cost billions of dollars, and yet there's no way to go ahead and hold those numbers within which is best for the payer, which is best for the state of Alaska, because from what I'm seeing, that the state of Alaska is the one that's eventually on the hook. It's essentially taking the risk, and if there's a profit, it goes elsewhere.
Mr. Chairman, I do believe that when they issue revenue bonds and those are purchased by financiers, that it would actually be those people purchasing the bonds that really carry the risk. And that's why the shipping contracts that are firm, uninterruptible, guaranteed over fairly long periods of time, 10, 15, 20 years, are so important in an open season.
Well, who's guaranteeing the bonds then? The bonds are guaranteed by the state of Alaska, isn't that correct?
The bonds would be strictly limited to the backing of AGDC, and that would be strictly limited to what they have in contracts to support that. The bonding authority, as the sponsor structured it in the prior versions of House Bill 9, would have been absolutely restricted to AGDC's authority. There was specific language included that would not let them put the state at liability or AHFC. And they could only issue bonds in relation to their explicit duties under House Bill 9.
Going over to your next point now is that politics in some kind of business decision that's going to be made, there's always going to be politics. I mean, that's part of why we're here. But if you look at 1998, when the Stranded Gas Act was passed by Governor Knowles, there was a provision put in there by the legislature, which was of the had the opposite perspective up there, and had to do with the change that went on and was opposed by the legislature at the time. But if we didn't have those changes from the Stranded Gas Act, we would have PPT held there for another 20 or 30 years. And instead of that, ACES came along, and that's what's put us in the position that we are, where we have a surplus now, as opposed to the deficit spending that happened when I first came in here 12 years ago. I mean, what's wrong with that, besides people just don't like the word politics being in any kind of business decision? Politics has to be there in order to go ahead and have that. I mean, don't you agree that PPT, which replaced ALF, was replaced by ACES, was a good thing?
Chairman Olson, I'm not prepared to discuss PPT. I will absolutely agree that you cannot absolutely take all politics out of a process. Okay. But we believe that allowing AGDC to continue without specific additional legislation sanctioning a project reduces that political risk. An AGDC pipeline project, AGDC's continuing operation budget, mm-hmm. is subject to legislative appropriation, always. Okay. The legislature has that power and nothing changes that.
Okay. I want to welcome Senator Kukish coming this morning.
Excuse me.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hawker, District 32, Anchorage.
Did you understand the point I was making? That back in 1998, the Stranded Gas Act was passed by Governor Knowles. There was a provision put in there by the legislature that disallowed then Governor Murkowski to go ahead and put this 2006 contract in place. And because of that, I think my idea, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that we've reaped the benefits of that, and why wouldn't we want to have that same type of provision there to keep this in check as well?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I very much appreciate the opportunity to address the committee on these questions, speaking on behalf of myself and the bill sponsor, Representative Chenault. The Stranded Gas Development Act process was a very different process than we have coming forward with the House Bill 9 process. And I think this was a very fundamental concern and question and difference that we really have to understand about why we believe HB 9 is structured as it is. If we go back to the Stranded Gas Development Act, which was actually, that bill was developed under the administration of Governor Knowles, and what it did, that act was about, we were talking about our gas in Alaska being economically stranded at the time. And it was believed that, I think very reasonably believed at the time, that without some significant economic incentive, some economic participation from the state of Alaska, that we would never be able to be competitive in the marketplace with Alaska's North Slope gas, which was what was called the Stranded Gas Development Act. Our gas was economically stranded. The SGDA, the Stranded Gas Development Act, empowered the executive, at the time was Governor Knowles, and then it became subsequently Governor Murkowski. It empowered the administration to enter into confidential negotiations with the producers, the North Slope producers, to develop and to determine what economic framework, what economic concessions, specifically tax concessions by the state of Alaska, would be appropriate or necessary to motivate industry, provide them an economically sound project to go forward to the marketplace with. And I think all of us that are sitting here today were in the legislature at that time, and I think we all discovered that that approach, while well-intended, was an approach that did not work for a number of reasons. And the first reason was that we had a situation where with decisions and a contract being put together, an economic agreement, a commercial agreement, behind closed doors by the governor, was something the public was not comfortable with that process. But it was that confidentiality, the requirement for the executive to work behind closed doors, negotiate all these agreements with the producers, and then bring them to the legislature for approval. A very different approach, and I say, and for that reason, it did fail. Another reason I believe that Stranded Gas Development Act failed, and we've recognized it in House Bill 9, was the changing market conditions. As when the Stranded Gas Development Act contracts were brought forward by Governor Murkowski after those confidential negotiations and bringing it to the legislature, we had an anomalous circumstance in the United States gas markets where we had gas that was basically record highs that have never been back to. You know, we're talking about, you know, $12 and $15 gas, which when we look at it today, we're back down to where gas is, you know, trading at about $1.88 again. So for a couple of reasons, Stranded Gas Development Act didn't work. One, I think the confidential negotiations, and two, the actual changing of the marketplace. We, with House Bill 9, looked at that, saw that, recognized it, and we felt the need for a different approach. The approach we're taking here is to create and empower a public corporation, a corporation to be working as openly as possible in the marketplace, a corporation that we give that direction to, not to operate, and again, they will necessarily need a level of confidentiality to go forward, but we're being as open and trusting as we possibly can. We're creating a corporation that's managed by a board of directors of three commissioners of the state of Alaska, which, you know, whether we agree or disagree with the individual executive that's in office, I think we can all agree that over time our state government system has proven to be a very powerful, very strong, very successful system, where through the control of the executive branch, through those three commissioners, through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, if we have one entity in the state of Alaska that has worked well for all Alaskans and under all political regimes, it's been Alaska Housing Finance, which is why, Senator, we structured AGDC under Alaska Housing Finance, and it's Alaska Housing Finance is essentially the state's investment bank, and we've created really a pipeline development group within the Alaska Housing Finance, our state's investment bank, and while we will have to, you know, allow them to operate to a degree as businesses need to, with a degree of business confidentiality, respecting parties that also have proprietary information that needs to be shared in order to go forward, I think we struck a delicate balance with this bill, which is where we also, you know, bring it to that next point, within that we are not operating in, and really specifically to your question, AGDC is operating as much as it can as an open public corporation. It's not the executive, one man, making a decision to bring to the legislature, but it's us vesting our trust and confidence in an agency of the state to move forward with a project. And truly, one of the, Ms. Delbridge explained it very well, one of our great concerns is that We're 60 legislators in this building. We all have provincial interests to represent. We are essentially obligated when a project comes forward. If it's not the one that absolutely benefits me to the greatest degree possible, I'm obligated to challenge it. But where we have an agency that has a more broader mission to serve all the state of Alaska, we really believe that can serve to insulate proper economic, best business practice management decisions from the inevitable politics of this building, where we, by very definition, are obligated to be provincial and argue for the best of our individual districts. So two very different situations. Stranded gas was very different. We believe we've learned the lessons of stranded gas and have structured HB9 in a manner that truly moves a project forward as efficiently and effectively as possible, sir.
One of the concerns, once you go back to AHFC, which is obviously one of the bankers that you've been talking about, AHFC is my understanding, is, and you know, I haven't been around long enough, and I know there's been a concern that AHFC supposedly is getting their money from housing, because it's a housing finance corporation. The people that are paying for that are people that are out there with housing issues that are there, and the 20 or million dollar a year dividend that there are on the backs of those people that have housing issues and are making those payments, and I guess there's an issue that people like that would like to see that as a non-profit, but that's a side issue from where we're going on. I just want to say that in spite of their ability to go and turn a profit, there are people that are raising objection to how they do it.
If I might actually respond to that, Senator Olson, thank you. Much as in the corporate world, AGDC is being structured as an operating, a subsidiary of Alaska Housing Finance. Mm-hmm. And we chose that because, again, of the respect that we all have for the management organization of Alaska Housing Finance and its huge track record in managing billions of dollars of state assets. By being a separate standalone corporation, AGDC does not in any way encumber the assets or operations of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. That entity remains completely separate. It's again like a corporation that has one subsidiary that goes over here and runs grocery stores, and another subsidiary over here that may have auto dealerships, but yet it's a commonly owned corporation, and that's really what we're doing here.
Okay. Any further comment?
I'd love to have Ms. Delbridge be able to continue, sir.
Please, Ms. Delbridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we're leaving off, the CS does not allow AGDC to offer contract transportation service. This leaves the line operating as a common carrier. I believe we discussed some of the problems with that and the need to be able to provide firm transportation service. Mm-hmm. You mentioned two other projects, and I believe that was in conjunction with the common contract carrier question. The contract that the state has under AGEA with TransCanada does allow that line to sign contracts for firm transportation service, but creates a sense of a sort of a hybrid by also requiring mandatory expansions and rolled-in rates that are more common carrier issues. Those two things have been cited at several times as conditions of that project that would have to be addressed if, in fact, the producers were to sign on to that project.
And addressing those issues, are they insurmountable? Are they insurmountable?
As far as that project goes, I can't speak to that. I do know that AGDC is absolute, particularly when the gas being shipped goes to our public utilities that need to be able to count absolutely on that supply firmly every day for every year of their contract, that they cannot have that interruptible service.
I understand that common carrier issue is best for oil. Gas lines tend to be contract carriers. Are there any Are there any gas lines that are out there that are common carrier gas lines?
Chairman Olson, I cannot definitively answer that. There are certainly some concerns that have been voiced to the sponsors that even within Alaska, mm-hmm. the fact that we don't enable an opportunity for gas lines to operate as contract carriers is even now presenting some challenges. Most of the gas pipelines in Alaska to date are public utility pipelines, and therefore they're in a real different group than what I will call gas transportation lines.
Sure. Okay. Continue.
Again, to that issue, AGDC has been advised by potential open season participants and financiers that without those firm contracts, there may not be the necessary underpinnings to finance a pipeline. Also, without firm service, public utilities in Alaska could face the potential of curtailed gas supplies. The CS also eliminates a regulatory structure for an in-state gas pipeline that can provide contract carriage. That leaves regulation highly uncertain, as this is not a public utility pipeline, which is one existing avenue for the RCA to look at regulating a pipeline at. Again, that uncertainty creates additional risk going into an open season. The CS does transition the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority to a new role as a gas marketer, governed by the Board of Directors of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, as House Bill 9 did. It also takes a step in doing that to consolidating the state's existing efforts at gas development, and the sponsors, again, appreciate that. It creates efficiency and helps avoid redundancy, but the CS also leaves some serious gaps there. In particular, the CS does maintain a provision allowing ANGDA to contract for professional services that are exempt from the state procurement code. Again, this is intended to allow ANGDA to contract for professional services such as experts in pulling together a gas marketing deal where the state procurement code could delay that immediacy. It does transition from that joint in-state gas line development team created under House Bill 369 in 2010 to AGDC, a provision granting access to information of all state agencies with appropriate protections in place for information that's held confidential already by those state agencies. It also transitions from JGDIT to AGDC, a provision requiring state agency cooperation and prioritization for AGDC requests, and also directing AGDC to avoid duplicating other efforts that the state has already done or supported. However, the CS takes away small ways that the sponsors found in House Bill 9 that direct state support to offset the tariffs that Alaskans would eventually pay for gas shipped through this line. For example, we would like to see that state agencies and local governments are asked to make state resources and local resources available, water, sand, and gravel, at usual and customary fees that the state could then pay for independently of having AGDC roll those into its tariffs. That's a small sign of state support for a line that's charged with getting gas to Alaskans.
One of the concerns that has been voiced by, I think, AMLP personnel is that if the state has that authority to go ahead and take as much sand, gravel, water, whatever resource they need out there, what does the municipality do if they want to go ahead and only sell part of that because they have future plans for it?
Chairman Olson,
well, first of all, has that concern been voiced to you?
Chairman Olson, we have not had concerns from AML or others about that provision, except for the Department of Natural Resources wanted to be clear that this was only non-hydrocarbon resources that we were talking about.
Okay. How do you go ahead and get around that, where the state has the ability to go ahead and trump essentially what a municipality has at a rock quarry, but they have a rock quarry that they want to go ahead and build either something for bridges or some other project that's out there? How do you allay those concerns?
Chairman Olson, I believe that's something that AGDC would be happy to work with the municipality on. The intent is that if, in fact, this resource is there and available, that it will be made available to this project at its usual and customary rates.
Okay, but if it's in the bill and it passes, it becomes law. How can you? Then the AGDC has the municipalities over a barrel.
Chairman Olson, the intent is absolutely not to put municipalities over a barrel, but to be able to cooperatively work together on that. And I believe that Representative Hawker has something he would like to say.
Representative Hawker, do you understand where I'm coming from? It's been voiced to me by municipalities that there are provisions within the original HB 9 that stated that they could go ahead and that the state would have the, or AGDC would have the authority to go ahead and take whatever resources within their confines, whether it's gravel, sand, water, whatever else is out there that they have at their discretion or that they've been trying to develop, that the state could go ahead or the AGDC could go ahead and take those for furtherance of the line, and they wouldn't really have a say to it, and they could essentially deplete all that was there with that. And how do we...
Mr. Chairman, I very much understand your questions. Very, very much understand it, and very much respect and appreciate the concerns of the municipalities. I, as a sponsor, my staff, our team developing this bill, have not been approached by AML or any community with those concerns. We have not heard those concerns expressed before this conversation with yourself. That said, Senator, I very much understand those concerns, and as sponsor of the bill, we would be very happy. It is not our intent to trump or damage communities. The concept behind the bill, again, that it was a state agency, ultimately under the control of a chief executive and three commissioners, including the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, that would provide a rational, very responsible, very well-balanced relationship with those communities to protect them. However, I would, as sponsor, I would be very happy to work with you to put language in there that made it very clear that this was not in any way to damage or hurt the communities, but that would be to provide, you know, when, if resources were reasonably readily available, that they needed to be made available to the project. The concept behind this provision was to not allow, for whatever reason, some small entity in the state of Alaska to essentially hold the entire state hostage in stopping a project, but we'd be very happy to work with you.
Well, first of all, let me make it clear. Was I reading the bill correctly that the agency would have that ability? Maybe I was reading the bill.
No, it's fair. You know, we had it written that the local sources of sand and gravel community resources were to be made available. However, they were to be adequately, appropriately, reasonably compensated in accordance with their customary terms. We hadn't really taken into consideration, and again, we had not heard any concerns from communities that we would be trying to overdraw, take too much from them. But I would certainly be willing to work towards balance there.
Okay. So if we struck that provision from the bill, you wouldn't be heartbroken over it?
I would prefer to not make commitments regarding the bill to you, to that degree, but I'd certainly be very happy to work with you on what would be best and appropriate here.
Okay. Ms. Delbridge?
And so, because, again, we want to make this bill. We don't also want to create a situation that in any way compromises the ability to go forward with a project should one come to fruition.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In line with the same category of issues, small ways of state support to help offset the tariffs Alaskans would eventually pay, the CS eliminates a provision that would have waived property taxes, state and local, during construction of a pipeline.
Local property taxes?
Yes, local government property taxes and state property taxes.
What's the municipality's view on it?
I believe in some cases it would be a municipality and in some cases it would be a borough. Okay. We have, again, not heard problems from local governments with that provision during these hearings on House Bill 9.
Okay.
To continue, the CS makes all of the work product that AGDC is building with state money public. There's a problem with this in that AGDC is developing a valuable asset on behalf of Alaskans designed to eventually further the ability to get gas to Alaskans. If this information, including specifically field studies and technical data, is in fact required to be public, the state is not getting an asset in return for its money that is specific only to this project.
But the concept is that if you're using public money, there should be some type of information let out so the people that are indeed going to be affected by it or essentially paying for it or that the money would be going to otherwise, we should have some kind of access to the, not just the information, but if for some reason the entity was sold, for example. Is that not true?
Chairman Olson, there is information that would be made public. Mm-hmm. Whenever AGDC needs to provide probably reams of information supporting different permits and licenses, authorizations that they ask the state or the federal government for, that still needs to be provided and is part of a public record. However, as they go through and get those fine details on the field study data, technical data on this route and engineering and design, to simply release that publicly allows any comer to take that and make that theirs. Mm-hmm. And yet the governor himself and AGDC also have looked at the results of this information as valuable assets that the state has that may actually be a way to incorporate AGDC and these assets it's developed into a larger pipeline project that in fact brings down rates for even more of Alaska and has greater potential.
Does that include coming down the Parks Highway straight to Big Lake as opposed to the Argea project that's probably going to take a left there and go toward
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, is that you have the highway lower 48 line proposed under the AGIA framework by the Alaska Pipeline Project. Mm-hmm. We also have heard the announcements that the same three producer companies that are expected to be engaged in a large export pipeline and TransCanada, who is the state's AGIA licensee, have decided that they will hold discussions now and come together to talk about an aligned larger project that goes from the North Slope to an LNG export facility at Tidewater in Alaska. Mm-hmm. At that point, AGDC has some assets that, depending on the route that that project, if it in fact decides that they want to have a project, decides to use, AGDC may have rights of way in hand. They have got an EIS underway with the federal government for a key portion of the route, I believe between Fairbanks and the North Slope. These are all assets that the state's entity, the state's gas line entity, would then have to come to that table with. Okay. Does that answer your question?
It does. Just there's concerns out there with HB 369 that has got such a specific route that's there. It seems that, you know, that was laid out. It sounds like too many things are in order, almost making it restrictive, especially if it comes out that it's not economic to go ahead and come on, to go ahead and put that pipeline in place.
Chairman Olson, I guess I would say that we're trying to avoid too many restrictions. And while that route is the one identified to serve the most Alaskans per House Bill 369's direction, mm-hmm. the way that the previous version of House Bill 9 before Jay was structured directed AGDC to follow through on that with modifications as necessary in an open season. Mm-hmm. So that if that route, whether it's a highway or whether it's the end piece, changes and lets them meet their mission of getting gas to Alaskans at an even better rate, they have the flexibility to adjust that route. In the future, of course, also, we are talking about the potential of other pipelines that may or may not even be attached to a large in-state pipeline. I believe the legislature of the session passed legislation encouraging oil and gas development of the area known as Middle Earth, the Kotzebue area. If there's gas found and they need to get that to a community and it meets the missions that AGDC has been directed to follow, mm-hmm. that's another kind of pipeline that they can pursue.
Okay, go ahead.
Moving on, the version J in the committee substitute does address public information and confidentiality, but not to a strong enough degree that would allow AGDC to develop an open season and pipeline project to participate in conversations with the producers in TransCanada on a larger aligned export project and to avoid duplicating work that's already been paid for in part by the state. The CS does call on AGDC to disclose publicly all information except information disclosing the particulars of the business or affairs of a private enterprise, an investor, or a person entering into a contract with AGDC. However, the version J before you does not allow AGDC to enter into confidentiality agreements with anyone other than state agencies. The CS requires disclosure of contracts for joint ownership, for sale, for operations, and management. This is an expansion of the requirements of disclosure that were in House Bill 9. It does not allow confidential information, the CS does allow confidential information to be exempt from the State Public Records Act, and that is something that is very important. Thank you. However, again, as we discussed, it does not give protection to the work product that AGDC is developing in the form of field studies and technical data, creating that asset that the state would have. Continuing. Again, we spoke about the definitions section, deleting the definition for in-state natural gas pipeline. At this point, we're not exactly sure what the intent is in deleting that definition, but it was important to us that the state entity designed to get gas, Alaskan gas, to Alaskans work on in-state gas pipelines and not on intrastate gas pipelines. I think that generally sums it up.
Gas lines.
We want it to focus on interstate within the state, not on gas lines that would go into Canada or somewhere else like that.
Hawker, go ahead and clear me up. Make sure I'm clear on this. Yeah. You're talking about intrastate issues as opposed to interstate issues.
Yes, sir. And I know Ms. Delbridge knows the difference, but she is misspeaking with the intra and the inter on that conversation.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's fine.
The one other thing that the CS does is it takes away the judicial review limitations. that, again, help create certainty and alleviate risk, and that are seen by the sponsors as one way that the state can further support a project that's directed to benefit the people of the state directly.
Anything else?
We're happy to get into whatever level of detail the committee would like on any aspect of what's in the version J or that we would like to see in the version J.
Actually, instead of going into the detail, we can discuss that. I just want to go ahead and come back to the main concepts that are out there. We got three, as I pointed out, there are three gas lines that are proposed. But as we look at this particular gas line in particular, I guess one of the issues that's come up is that it's my understanding there are tax credits being that are going to be given by the state out there to two jackup rigs that are going to be heading up for up to Cook Inlet this coming summer, and if they do indeed find, and they seem to be fairly certain, otherwise they wouldn't be putting the millions, if not billions, of dollars into their exploration. Why do we even need a gas line coming down from the North Slope, following the route as was prescribed by HB 369? Mm-hmm. Give me a reason why we should have that.
Chairman Olson, I'm happy to. Of those three gas lines that you're referencing, two of them are designed to export Alaska's gas in fairly massive volumes to markets outside of Alaska. An in-state line has generally been viewed, and in the sponsor's eyes, remains a way to get in-state gas to Alaskans in-state. There may be an opportunity to create a project in the future here, perhaps under this aligned concept, that accomplishes both. But AGDC, the sponsors would like to see empowered, even if one of those is successful, to then work off of that on spur lines and other ways to connect as much of Alaska as possible to natural gas. As far as the Cook Inlet situation goes, we do realize that there are jackup rigs there covered, I believe, headed there, yes, sir, covered extensively by the credits that the legislature has offered. It will take some time before any gas prospects in Cook Inlet are actually firmed up to the point that we know that there could, in fact, be production out of them.
But you don't expect production on this line to be completed at least to 2020, don't you?
I do believe that it would be operational in 2018 under the project plan proposed by AGDC. However, that is, of course, contingent on their ability to hold an open season in 2013 and be able to then carry forward with that project. The Cook Inlet situation...
2018, Representative Hawker, you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I'd be happy to provide a copy of their project plan if you would like. Okay, absolutely.
Go ahead and answer the question, I guess.
Yes.
Well, continue on with the question. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Cook Inlet situation is difficult. The sponsors themselves are ones that have been very instrumental in trying to encourage that exploration and development that you've just spoken about in a vibrant Cook Inlet. Mm-hmm. However, we've reached a situation where the Cook Inlet utilities, specifically NSTAR, Chugach, MLNP, have contracted with PRA to do a comprehensive evaluation of what actually is and isn't available. Mm-hmm. As of right now, by 2015, there is a significant portion of those utilities' base load of gas that they do not have contracts for. That gas is not available. We sincerely hope that it does become available and that the utilities have what they need to keep essentially the lights on and the heat on in South Central Alaska. But that's something also that I think that the sponsors feel we've counted on for a long time and are not yet seeing. There's a larger problem there, and that is the fact that the Cook Inlet market is very isolated, and it's not attached to other markets without an LNG export facility. Mm-hmm. The LNG export facility has been slowing down significantly and may not even be operating past a certain point this year, next year, because they can't get that long-term gas supply to keep that open. Without some avenue to sell their gas, particularly with the seasonal variations in South Central's in-state use, a lot of those small producers may not have a market for whatever they do in fact find. We have contacted a number, if not all, of the Cook Inlet gas producers. We have asked them.
I just want to welcome Senator Gary Stevens to the audience this morning. With all due respect, Ms. Delbridge, I just want to put that on the record.
Absolutely,
go ahead,
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
We have general support. We have general support from most of the Cook Inlet gas producers that bringing North Slope gas in the time frame that we're discussing into Cook Inlet is not expected to hurt their operations in Cook Inlet. We have also received indications that it could actually help if that is something that serves as that foundation for continued exports, so that they too have somewhere to put their gas with those seasonal fluctuations and swings that the local market simply can't accommodate.
If that was the other question, is that what do you do about gas storage there in Cook Inlet? What are your comments on that?
Chairman Olson, the gas storage facility that is currently under construction and I believe nearly complete and ready to take injections was designed and has maximum capacity strictly to meet the seasonal fluctuation that has created this risk that there's not enough gas on those very coldest days of winter, the peak demand.
Sure.
It unfortunately even expanded to its geologic limits, would not be sufficient to take care of this larger base load issue that we're talking about in the future.
Okay. Going back, though, to the concept of finding gas there in Cook Inlet with these two jackup rigs that are coming up there this summer, don't you agree, though, that they could have gas into the pipeline that's coming out to service the South Central area quicker than you could get a pipeline from the North Slope coming down?
Chairman Olson, theoretically that would be correct. However, once they figure out where they want to punch holes to see if there's gas, they also are going to need the capital. The individual companies are going to need to have the available capital to delineate with additional drilling. And these wells are expensive. A lot of them are offshore. That's where a jackup would work. Exactly. And so they're going to have to figure out, first of all, if they can find gas. Mm-hmm. If they can find gas, they have to figure out if it's actually in a formation that they can produce with technology and with geology. If they've got that figured out, then they're going to have to look at how to develop and produce a field, which is going to take additional years. It could easily be a number of years before something is actually in production.
If I might add to that, Senator, the sponsors of the bill have been working, and we recognize the question about whether it's best to go south to north or north to south. As the sponsors, we recognize that there are literally, virtually, known, unlimited, from our standpoint, quantities of gas on the North Slope, 100% reliability of gas delivery, and we absolutely want security in our sourcing. The Cook Inlet security, this is so terribly speculative. We keep talking a lot of ifs, if we have gas, if we have this, if we have that. Well, we hope, the sponsors absolutely hope, beyond our greatest desire, that all those ifs come true. But in this world of exploration, that's something we're not willing to bet our communities on. We know we've got the sure bet on the North Slope gas. But we also, in recognizing the existence of those ifs, the sponsors are prepared to come forward with an amendment in this legislation that specifically recognizes that if there is gas in the Cook Inlet, and if there can be the long-term contracts necessary to commit that gas to Fairbanks, that AGDC would be directed then to specifically pursue a south-to-north line.
Okay. Any further questions of my members of the committee for? If not, what we're going to do is go ahead and adjourn. We're going on to the floor. We want to announce that the Committee and Regional Affairs Committee will meet again tomorrow. We'll post the time. That's later on today. With that, we're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.